Hello and welcome to Masters of Our Domain, the podcast that was once upon a time allegedly about the hit 90s sitcom Seinfeld, and is currently in a transitional phase before the new bit of the podcast starts. I am Milo Edwards, and I'm joined as ever by my co-host Phoebe Roy.
Hello.
There she is. She's back. I mean, I say as ever. There was a period when I was not joined by Phoebe Roy, but I am now joined.
That's a very long intro. Is there any chance that we can trim the intro back a bit?
I don't think we have to do that every time.
Can we make the intro a bit more efficient?
Yeah. I think we will come up with a new one that correctly expresses. Now is probably as good a time as any to announce what the podcast is going to be.
We did that, didn't we?
I don't think we did. No, I don't think, because we were still confirming it last time we recorded.
When we did the Just the Lads, What's the Deal, didn't we?
Did we? I can't remember if we did or not.
All I remember is talking about unicycling and whether or not
we certainly did
whether
that.
Or not ISIS had a kindergarten.
Yeah, which presumably they do. There must be an ISIS crash.
Well, look, in the modern world, you cannot expect people to join your terrorist cell unless you're offering childcare and dental.
Well, yeah. I mean, childcare is very expensive. Especially, I mean, you're going to need quite long-term childcare if it's a suicide mission as well.
Yeah. Can't just have your 30 piddly hours. No.
Okay, just you know, there's like a, you know, in the wreckage of the car bomb, there's just like a phone ringing, and it's the nursery wanting to know when exactly you were planning on, you know, picking him up. Like, someone has had to stay late, I'm afraid, and if you do this again, you know, we might not be able to accept him again.
I just wanted to double check whether or not he is allowed apple slices. Is he allowed juice?
Yeah. Is he allowed juice? I mean, yeah.
Is he allowed juice?
Complex Islamic scholarly arguments about that.
Some of the children are not allowed juice. Okay, well, we can re-announce it. Do you want to re-announce it? Let's re-announce it up top.
Yeah. So in case we didn't announce it before, or in case we didn't announce in full detail what it was going to be, and I now increasingly am feeling like we did, but just a reminder, in case you missed that episode, Patrick Wyman is going to be joining the team, and we're going to be doing... sort of something that is sort of between what we were doing with the Rome cast and what we were doing with the Seinfeld cast. We're going to be sort of melding the two into a kind of light-hearted classics related pop culture podcast where we talk about classics related pop culture things with your friend and ours, Patrick Wyman.
Yeah, which is very exciting. Yeah. and I'm looking forward to it.
It is very exciting because we love to get Patrick Wyman involved.
We need a shorter intro, if that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, there will be a shorter intro.
Because otherwise it's starting to sound a little bit like, well, it's starting to sound like, ironically enough, like a kind of like an emperor's title. You got your four names and you got, you know, your Tribunician, Nician, Potestas,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's too much. At some point or another, we are going to mint our own coin and we're going to put the whole of the intro around the coin, obviously. But, you know, that's
of course, yeah. That is the natural progression of things. But that's not what we're going to be up to today. Today we're doing an episode about a sitcom that Phoebe discovered during a period that we might call Baby Madness.
If you like, you could call it Baby Madness. So, yeah, so we're doing a bad sitcom today. I'm very excited to talk about this one because normally when we do bad sitcoms, we watch one episode because that's all we can cope with. But yeah, what we're talking about today is a show that I have watched every single episode of. I watched it in the last week that I was pregnant and in the first week of my baby son's life, when I was just had to be awake all the time. Supervising him, and it is a show called Young and Hungry, which I discovered when scrolling through the comedy section on 4OGs. Like, I just need something to just like look at, just to kind of keep me awake and to stop me just like sort of falling asleep like while feeding him and so on. And I found this sitcom, and I don't think it's exaggerating to say that it's the worst thing I've ever seen. because
it's the worst thing I've ever seen.
It's like, it's definitely up there, because like the other bad sitcoms that we've seen all had a certain kind of anarchic air to them. So like the Economy Seinfeld starring John Mulaney, which was like someone had not just watched an episode of Seinfeld, but read the pitch document for Seinfeld, then had a traumatic brain injury, and then been asked as part of their therapy to say what they thought Seinfeld was about. And that's how you get the 2015 sitcom Mulaney. We had the one about the cavemen, which was the very confused, very confused one based on an advert about, which was suggesting that cavemen were an ethnic minority. And
I would say this show kind of made cavemen look watchable.
It made cavemen look watchable. What else? Oh yeah, the big top one. That was extraordinary.
Yeah. Although it had a sort of perverse charm to it.
It had a perverse charm. There is no charm at all about Young and Hungry. This is what I found so incredibly fascinating and compelling about it. Unfortunately, the first episode doesn't have theme tune. But Milo, did you manage to find the theme tune and the credits on YouTube?
There was some kind of theme music, but hang on, let me put it up now.
Yeah, but that's not the theme tune. The theme tune is a song that was written for it, which I watched the whole of a season of this show thinking that it was a Flo Rida song, but it's not.
So this is a Sridhar Solanki and Sid Solanki, I Like That, brackets Young and Hungry theme song.
That's right. And you need to see the credits as well, because they're sort of semi-pornographic.
Oh wow, it's like Eurodance.
Yeah. Well, it's like Flo Rida. It's like a Flo Rida track.
What I am gonna do is I'm gonna edit that in. You need to for people to listen to.
I strongly suggest you look it up on YouTube as well, because then you can see the credits, and they're quite something. They're really quite something.
Yeah, something I will say about this show, because I pulled it up on Wikipedia, and I should say my girlfriend Annabelle was very upset about being made to watch this, because it quite often, you know, a window into the podcaster's lifestyle. I quite often will say, oh, I've just got this like 20-minute thing that I need to watch for the pod, and then we can like watch whatever we actually want to watch. And usually Annabelle is sort of curious enough that you, and actually quite often for Movie Corner, it's if we have to watch a movie, it's something reasonably watchable. Mm-hmm. And then this, she got so upset by about 5 minutes in that she just started watching TikToks on loud on her phone. And I was like, I think TikToks on loud is exceptionally, I'm not saying it's good, but I do actually have to watch it.
It's like a teenager on a bus.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd like it if I saw a teenager on a bus watching Young and Hungry. I was about to say what year it was out in, and I think it's about 10 years ago, but it's
2014, I believe.
But it has an oddly timeless quality. You could believe that it was made now, but you could sort of also believe that it was made in the late 90s as well. And there's nothing really to differentiate. There are no markers of time or place. It's supposed to be San Francisco, but it has this hermetically sealed kind of airless quality.
Mm.
And what I think is what one thing I think is fun about this show before we get into the fine grained detail is,
sure,
and something that I think tethers it to our experience making this show that you're listening to in the first place is that it's very similar to what you might imagine a sitcom written by George Costanza would be, because if we look back. We look back at some of Costanza's behavior. So when he and Jerry are writing the show about nothing, And yeah. people keep trying to get him to introduce some plot. And he keeps saying, no, no, the show is about nothing. And we see some similar bullheadedness when it comes to him coming up with the Jerkstore comeback. So
I was going
to
say, this show is very Jerkstore coded.
It's very Jerkstore, because people keep saying, yeah, or you could do this. They try to yes and him, but Costanza is not sympathetic to the improv lifestyle. He's very no. anti-improv. So he says no to everything. He says, no, no, no. The line is Jerkstore. And
he's right about that. We do have to stand, unfortunately.
First of all, the line is Jerkstore. However, what we have with this show is, so for example, some of the characterization is, okay, so we have a housekeeper, and the joke is that the housekeeper is black. And you imagine the rest of the writers room being like, oh, okay, so do you mean she's sassy? Do you mean she doesn't take any shit? You can imagine this showrunner getting more and more angry and being like, no, 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 the joke is that she is black. And we also have...
It's that simple.
It's that simple. The main character has a flatmate and best friend. The joke is that she is Latina. So again, you imagine, oh, well, could we make her sassy? No, no. The joke is that when she says her own name using the correct Spanish pronunciation, that's funny. That is automatically funny that she says Rodriguez like a Latina would say Rodriguez. That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have another character. The joke is that he's gay, but he's also Korean. So two jokes in one.
They're spinning wheels in this writer's room.
Yeah, spinning wheels.
They're like gay Korean. What would that be like? Let's spitball it.
What if a guy was Korean? That'd be pretty funny. That'd be wild if a guy was Korean. Yeah. And then the joke.
What about a gay North Korean?
The joke about the main character is that she is blonde. That's the joke, as far as I can tell.
Which is a classic, to be fair. One of the all-time genres of joke.
Every so often, they try and remember that she's meant to have a kind of relatable personality. And they do this in this absolutely incredible, jarring way. So in amongst the weak puns, charmless punchlines, setups you can see coming a mile off, in between those, we have her occasionally being like, yeah, and my mum's dead. And you're like, are you gonna do anything with that? No? No, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, did she watch the pilot for this show and then kill herself?
Potentially. Out of shame.
You would be very ashamed.
There's a kind of she's sort of committed a kind of very specific ancient samurai suicide technique.
I was going to say, the joke about her mum is that she's a samurai and she lives by sort of an ancient Bushido code. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Ancient absent sitcom mum code.
Yeah.
And...
Oh, my mum, she only serves the shogun.
And every so often she starts talking about how her heroine is Julia Child and she used to watch Julia Child with her mum.
Mm. Yeah, the inventor of the adult, Julia Child.
The inventor of the adult. And also, again, just to tether us to the theme of the show, a descendant of Julius Caesar. She is the last of the Julii. Is Julia Child. So she has a very, very long title as well. Have you ever heard Julia Child's voice?
To be honest, whilst I know the name Julia Child, I'm not overly familiar with what her deal is or who she is.
She was a very, very famous American chef and TV cook.
Right, okay. Yeah, chef is not surprising me.
Is not surprising. Like, so it would be surprising.
She was like, my greatest hero in life is actually this woman who's not a chef.
She was an American serial killer. It just so happens that she just made a fucking... dynamite eggs Florentine.
Yeah, it's possible.
So Julia Child, I strongly recommend, if you've never heard what Julia Child sounds like, she had the weirdest fucking voice of anyone who has ever lived. Like, it's genuinely
weirder than Burchill.
Weirder than Burchill.
Wow.
Weirder than Burchill. Because Burchill, like, yeah, it's a weird voice, but It's sure. an identifiably weird voice. So it's the voice of an orphan who has had to clear asbestos out of a chimney. That's the virtual voice.
Yeah, the voice of a sort of Cockney pickpocket who smokes 50 jar and blacks a day.
You know what? I've actually just remembered there is a tragic asbestos story in Julie Birchall's life. So please consider that specific reference withdrawn. But she does have a weird little child's voice. Julia Child, ironically, does not have a weird child's voice. She has got... Okay. If you are making... Because obviously I've had to do this quite a lot recently. If you're doing like a kind of funny creature voice for a child in order to make the child laugh, and you keep dropping it and it keeps turning into a different voice, and so it's like four different voices all at once, that's what Julia Child sounded like. So she had this very kind of weird sort of up note there, but also very kind of throaty and lugubrious, and because she would, you know, she would be doing her demonstrations and she would say baking like that, and it's genuinely an extraordinary voice. Yes, well, Jordan Peterson sounds like her, because Jordan Peterson...
Have you ever tried cooking a dinner for 10 people and they don't even appreciate it?
So you got your eggs, and you gotta count two by two so that you can get them ready for baking. It's like that.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So that is a weird voice.
Again, strongly recommend finding some footage of Julia Child and hearing that. Unfortunately, nobody attempts the voice in
found footage of Julia Child in the like show, the Blair Witch Project. Yeah. It's just someone making a blancmange. We don't know what happened to Julia Child. All we have is this Betamax tape that someone found in the woods under an old copy of Razzle.
It's a Spanish horror film. Julia Child represents anxiety. Because that is the
Julia
Niña.
A non-union Spanish equivalent. And that is the joke, is that she's Spanish. Otherwise, she's just like Julia Child. Yeah.
So do you want to say what happens in this show?
Yeah, before we do that, I just wanted to, because I pulled up the Wikipedia for it. But the first thing I would like to say is that the logo for Young and Hungry is just Microsoft Word art. I cannot stress that enough. Like, all they've done is they've put the G of Young at a slightly off angle to the rest of the word, as though to imply that it's been put on wonky by like a sort of, a cut rate tradesman. Not someone you'd find on Checker Trade, like probably the sort of fly-by-night who might go door-to-door and ask you if you need a sitcom logo hanging up on your wall. Just that it ran for five seasons, which is crazy to me.
Oh, yeah. Five seasons. And it ends on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Because they were going to make a film. But the film... didn't end up happening. And I sort of quite like the idea that sort of like that maybe the film had like kind of, I don't know, kind of mob funding or something.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and also, I mean, how would you make a film out of this? They barely made a 22-minute episode out of it. And also, it was produced by five different production companies at different times, which is also quite... It feels like, you know, like sometimes when on a high street you get like a cursed lot where like every shop or whatever that moves in there will close within 6 months.
Yeah, like absolutely. The cursed lot. Yeah.
Yeah, and this feels like this is that for a production company. Like if your production company takes on the production of Young and Hungry, Young and Hungry will be commissioned, but your production company will somehow part ways with it or fold.
Well, the showrunner angered a witch when he was just in his cradle. So I think that's what happened there. In terms of like how a Young and Hungry film would work, here's a pitch for you. We open with all the main characters sitting around a blueprint of the World Trade Center. And they're just talking about their anger at the American Empire and how they want to do something spectacular with it.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. As well, they should. I was also just looking up Emily Osment, the lead in this show, and she was in Spy Kids 2 and Spy Kids 3, and also
not Spy Kids 1.
No, apparently not. And also in the Hannah Montana TV series and Hannah Montana the movie in 2009.
So I think we've got a little bit of, no, it's not so much a Mandela effect, but more a kind of what's going on? What are they hiding from us? What are they hiding? Because, right, do you remember Haley Joel Osment?
No, but I'm just seeing that that's her older brother.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was about to set up a whole conspiracy. Okay, never mind.
He was in Forrest Gump as a child. So Haley
Joel Osment is the little boy in The Sixth Sense. And the whole time I was watching, I was like, okay, so her last name's Osment, and she looks exactly like Haley Joel Osment. So what the fuck is going on here? But if they're related, that I suppose that makes more sense.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, that makes more sense. Well, I would imagine actually...
Yeah, being able to see dead people would be a more amusing experience than watching Young and Hungry.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, certainly. Certainly less traumatic, I would have thought.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's the plot?
Okay. I feel like pitch it to me.
Paint me a picture.
So, okay, as far as I can recall, and I'm going to warn you, my memory of this has been affected by PTSD, so there may be details that I'll miss. So, you know, Emily Osment, she, whose name is Gabby Diamond, she goes for an interview.
Which, by the way, is an amazing fucking Nashville country name. Why is she called Gabby Diamond?
Absolutely. Well, so apparently, and I'm getting this from Wikipedia, she is named after and inspired by San Francisco food blogger Gabby Moskowitz, whoever that is.
But, okay, well, first of all, look, I know that I've got, like, I know I've got mummy brain. But Moskowitz and Diamond don't sound anything fucking like each other.
No.
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 That's like, you can't say, like, that's like, that. You can't say that. That's like saying you're named after Milo the dog, for example.
Well, Lord knows I do get that a lot. And I'm like, no, my parents did not name me after the dog from The Mask. Next question.
Is the dog Thank from The Mask you. Called Milo? Oh, he is, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I used to get this in Russia all the time because, bafflingly, Russians, despite being exposed to a shockingly small amount of Western popular culture, have overwhelmingly seen the mid-90s Jim Carrey vehicle movie The Mask. And I do not understand why. I have met so few people in the West who have seen the movie The Mask.
Really?
I think most people are familiar with The Mask as a character, like, because there was also a TV series and all that kind of stuff. But the sheer numbers of people in Russia who have seen and have a good memory of the Jim Carrey movie The Mask is unbelievable.
Well, because I think that might be an age thing, because, like, it was huge when I was a kid.
Yeah. But to be clear, what I mean by this is not that, like, no one has seen it or a decent number of people haven't seen it, but just the sheer extent to which people in Russia, almost regardless of age, had seen and had a good working knowledge of the movie The Mask was unbelievable to me.
Do you remember that? You remember that story about, I can't remember where the hostages were being held, but there were some hostages that were being held. And one of the things that they, when they recounted their kind of horrible traumatic experiences upon being released, one of the things that they said was that they were constantly being called Mr. Bean because of being British and being subjected to picture painting of events that happened in Mr. Bean. And a specialist in this region said, okay, right, I understand that your experience was extremely traumatic. You're lucky to be alive. You're probably going to need, you know, years of therapy to get over this terrible experience. But what you need to understand is how popular Mr. Bean is in this country. So they were just trying to vibe with you. They were trying to say something kind of like relatable. It's like, oh, it's British Mr. Bean. And this wasn't literally part of your program of hostage torture. This was just something that their hostage takers.
I mean, imagine the hostage takers bringing out the Mr. Bean tapes, and you're like, just kill me, man. Just I just
not
I
this. Not this.
Can I
man.
Choose death? Is that an option? Yeah, well, actually, another one in Russia that is inexplicably very popular, Mr. Bean, comes up all the time.
Interesting.
Yeah. People are like, it is one of the first things people mention if you mention the UK.
Where was it that it's meant that Tommy Cooper is meant to be incredibly popular?
Morocco?
Turkey? No. It's not Morocco. It's somewhere really surprising. It's like potentially it's Iraq.
It would just be really funny if he was very popular in all of the fez-wearing countries.
Yeah, no. I agree it would be, but it's not. It's either Iraq or Afghanistan.
I wasn't keen on British comedians until I saw his hat. Like, this guy knows where it's at.
Does know where it's at.
Yeah, I don't know. I do know that Only Fools and Horses is very popular in Serbia, which I know I've brought up before.
I've brought this up before, but...
Yeah.
It bears repeating. I never get sick of
hearing it. It does bear repeating because it makes no sense. It makes zero sense. But yeah, that is the case.
You kind of want to know at what point Only Fools and Horses reached Serbia and sort of what effect that might have had on the
NATO
character.
Were actually dropping VHS tapes of Only Fools and Horses over Belgrade.
Maybe that's what was happening.
It was very controversial
sort of
set up
as a kind of relational, hands across the divide.
Yeah. Well, it was very controversial when one of the VHS tapes actually landed on the roof of the Chinese embassy, and the Chinese ambassador was forced to watch Del Boy falling through the bar, and he didn't find it amusing at all, and it almost caused a diplomatic incident.
Okay. Well, we can go through what happens very briefly. So, Gabby Diamond.
She goes for this interview with the housekeeper, about whom the joke is that she is black.
The joke is that she's black. And just to clarify, I've seen over 100 episodes of this TV show.
Mm.
That joke does not change. That's the joke.
Great.
All the way through.
There's a bit in the show where it's supposed to be a big laugh. Like, there's a huge amount of canned laughter where she says, "My wig nearly fell off."
Yeah. Like, just to be transparently clear for the low comprehension among us, I don't think that that's a good joke, but that is what the joke is meant to be. You are encouraged to find it amusing that this woman is black.
Yeah.
Even though it's not quite clear in what manner that is amusing, in what way or manner.
Yeah.
Yeah, she says her wig nearly fell off. There is an episode where she gets mistaken for a drag queen.
Okay, right. Yeah.
And then
I like it when there's like a kind of like a club sandwich of potential offence in one joke, where they're really getting two groups at once.
And then she decides that because it becomes so popular with her fan base that she decides to just let people think that she is a drag queen.
Right.
But what is even wilder is that there is an episode where Gabby tracks down a family member, and it turns out that the family member is a trans man who has since transitioned, and I absolutely assumed that we were about to hear some of the most offensive jokes in the history of the world. Right. However, it is oddly compassionate.
Oh.
And oddly kind of, oh, yeah, that's my uncle now. I'm so glad he's able to live his authentic life. And then we return immediately to the joke being that Yolanda is black. It's very discombobulating.
In the writer's room, again, the writer's just furious as they're just like, "What, you're not going to make any jokes about the fact that he's a trans man?" And they're like, "No, there's nothing funny about a trans man. He's not black. He's just trans. Sorry, I should have made that clear in the script."
In fact, does it? You know what? Okay, right. Get the assistant in. Can we every time Gabby's trans uncle appears, could we put in brackets "not black" just so that we're clear what the joke is? Can we put that in brackets? He's definitely not Korean, because how could he be? Because that would be funny, and this is an emotional storyline that we're doing.
So she
shows up for her interview. The joke is that Yolanda is black. Yolanda is the housekeeper for a tech billionaire called Josh.
Yeah, which a likely name for a tech billionaire to have. And he is played by Jonathan Sadowski, which honestly, every time I read it, with apologies to Jason Sadowski, I just imagine him every time I think about this man. Apologies to friend of the show, Jason Sadowski, who, as far as I know, had nothing to do with the Young and Hungry.
Strongest possible apologies to friend of the show, Jason.
Yeah, I do wonder if he does get the odd errant email intended for Jonathan Sadowski.
The odd death threat.
It would be quite fun to get someone else's death threat and then just respond being like, oh, sorry, this, I think you've got the wrong email. And then you get like a polite response back. Like, oh, I'm terribly sorry.
Like Ian H. Watkins, latterly of Steps.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Who after the dissolution of Steps, I know I made that sound like it was a kind of sort of the state agency.
Yeah. Well, it was when Henry VIII was trying to form hearsay.
Yeah.
What he did was he dissolved steps in order to free up the money.
He expelled the steps monks from their institutions and seized their libraries. In order to lay the groundwork for the hearsay reformation. But then there was all this splintering because they couldn't possibly have predicted. They couldn't have possibly predicted the rise of the S Club Junior Princes.
No. Or indeed the whole Liberty/Liberty X debacle.
Yeah. The defenestration of Liberty X, which was just a really important sort of historical sort of turning point.
Liberty X was actually a woke way of referring to the members of Liberty in a non-gendered manner.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
But people did complain that it was hard to say.
What, Liberty X?
Yeah.
Quite easy to say.
Before that, everyone
that's
was
really
either
easy.
Power, Libertix.
Yeah.
Libertix. Yeah.
Libertix. Yeah.
That's nice. That's what they should have gone with.
What, Libertix?
Yeah.
That was like a child's cough mixture.
Yeah.
But then they could have branched out. But yeah, poor old Ian H. Watkins, who was extremely keen after the dissolution of Steps and the reformation of the Steps Republic, that he was extremely keen to drop the H, as it were. And then something happened, which meant he couldn't cut around being called Ian Watkins.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so he gets a lot of abuse attended for convicted child sex offender Ian Watkins from The Lost Prophets.
No, he literally does.
I know he does. Yeah.
Despite the fact that Ian Watkins from The Lost Prophets is in prison for the rest of his life, and poor old Ian H. Watkins from Steps is stuck with, you know, people trying to land helicopters on him.
Yeah, well. Actually, recently I found out a bit of Ian Watkins brackets Lost Prophets news, which is that apparently he's been giving guitar lessons to other inmates in prison, and some people were very exercised about this. And because my brain works the way it does, and I was like, well, to be fair, he is good at the guitar. You know, other things aside, if you keep him narrowly confined to the teaching of the guitar. You wouldn't want him teaching any kind of sexual ethics course in the prison or anything like that.
No, but, you don't want him to run any kind of HR workshops.
Ian HR Watkins.
Now, is this or is this not an inappropriate way to talk to a colleague?
Yeah.
Because presumably, like, he's never getting out of prison because on account of being a, you know, kind of significant and proven danger to the public. But he's
without wishing to go into too much detail, I mean, they were very serious child sex offences, even by the standards of child sex offences.
Pretty fucking horrendous.
Yeah.
That stuff.
But
if he's teaching guitar lessons to other criminals, I mean, What's the worst they can do with the guitar lesson? I mean, I suppose you could conceivably add some prison time just to prevent them from involving themselves on an open mic night.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, also, what's funny about it to me is that, like, he's the one who's a nonce, but he's not getting better at the guitar by teaching the other inmates. The ones who are getting better at the guitar, who are getting some kind of benefit from this, are the other inmates, who it's not clear if they're nonces or not.
So it's almost like a kind of, it's almost like a kind of mutual aid thing. Like, who, like, you know, or who's got a talent they want to share with the group? I mean, the main point is that you don't want him giving guitar lessons to children. That's what you don't want Ian Watkins from The Lost Prophets doing.
Yeah, they're not, you know, they're not putting children in adult men's prisons. I mean, you know, it's not America.
Presumed that they're keeping the criminal children elsewhere.
Yeah, you would assume.
Yeah, you'd hope so.
Yeah. No, I mean,
because you need the soft play for a kick-off.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. The soft play prison with the little ball pit.
Yeah. But the balls are all like ball and chains, but they're like little plastic balls.
Oh yeah, that's fun.
That's cute.
Entering a young offenders institution via a slide.
I was thinking of getting the baby a little orange jumpsuit, which is specifically for when he has to be buckled into the buggy, which is his latest and greatest enemy.
Guantanamo baby.
Yeah, Guantanamo baby.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, like,
that's something.
But because I've told you this, right, about how he's really into Eurodance now.
Right, yeah, of course.
So you have to play him Bass Hunter.
Finger baby.
You have to play him Bass Hunter many, many times a day. Well, the problem with the Venger Boys at this point is that the Venger bus like failed some pretty serious health and safety code.
Mm.
So,
well, like, and also since you les, they can't even afford to take it inside the M25.
Well, the Venger bus was found to be involved in people trafficking. It's actually not that funny.
Yeah,
not funny at all.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to Ibiza, all right, to link up with people from the Spanish mafia.
Yeah, so there is a bit of a sort of Guantanamo vibe around my gaff at the moment because of having to play All I Ever Wanted, followed by Samba de Janeiro, 50 fucking times a day.
Yeah, Bass Hunter once played at a College May Ball in Cambridge, and apparently the performance was kind of a disaster, in which the crowd like bullied him into like kissing the keyboard player, because there was something like Bass Hunter was like insisting that he wasn't gay for some reason. And in the end, Bass Hunter got so drunk that he got thrown out after his set, which is quite funny as the headliner to be thrown out.
Yeah. It's because he was hunting bass. This is why, like, you can't cage Bass Hunter. Like, you can't put him in a situation where he's like locked in a room because he's constantly hunting the bass.
Yeah,
he needs to be
like,
free. He needs to roam.
Yeah, he's like a border collie. Like, if he doesn't hunt bass for, you know, a protracted period of time, he will just slowly go mad.
He will start chewing the furniture. Because they're very intelligent breeds. Breed the bass hunters. So they need constant stimulation. They need constant puppy puzzles.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the bass hunters are a type of Scandinavian that have a level of intelligence that's almost at the level of a normal person.
Is he Scandinavian?
I think he's Scandinavian, but I'm not. I have no particular beef with the Scandinavians, but I did think it was funny to imply that they were subhuman in some way. Yeah, he's Swedish. Yeah,
it's quite good though, because like if you imply that the Scandinavians are subhuman, at least there is no horrifying history attached to that.
No. Well, that's the thing, is that the Scandinavians have been pretty much at the top of every racial hierarchy that's ever been drawn up. I mean, apart from,
I mean, according
as furious as those things are,
like, according to them, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's so just, they always seem to be the ones doing the drawing.
Yeah, I think it's time we drew some other ones. No, yeah. I don't think that. For the benefit of the record,
to be clear, I don't think that. But if we were to draw up a racial hierarchy, why not give the Scandinavians a little bit of a taste of the bottom of the powerful ones?
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
Yeah. Were we to do that?
Yeah.
Were we to do that? Yeah, okay, so right, back to the fucking plot of this. Back to the fucking plot of this show. Before we accidentally come up, before we accidentally kind of invent anti-Scandinavian fascism from first principles.
Yeah.
Before we do that. So she's there for an interview to be the private chef of this tech billionaire.
Jason Sadowski.
His name is Jason. So they've already got this guy who won Top Chef there, who is very hot and won Top Chef. And there's a line where the guy who is a gay Korean, who is called Elliot for some reason, very popular Korean name, Elliot.
Elliot Park. Classic.
Yeah, pretty classic, but
one Elliot, of the canonical five Korean surnames.
Elliot, I feel less so. Fortunately.
Yeah, well, I think he's supposed to be like Korean American, right?
Yeah, he is Korean American. You do get to meet Elliot's mother, and if you thought that the portrayal of Elliot was racist, then my God, have you got a treat to look forward to if you really, really like to see racism against Koreans.
Joke about her is that she loves Douglas MacArthur.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, and which again is suspect as a joke. He gets married to a guy later on who the joke about this guy is that he's Jewish. So that's that joke there.
Oh, okay.
He begins every sentence with "Honey, I'm a Jew," which is again fantastic. You like to hear a bit of repetition because then it makes you. It's almost like listening to the Odyssey, just hearing the repetition of being like, oh, okay.
The ring composition. This is the ring. To the tune of "Baby, I'm Amazed," "Honey, I'm a Jew."
Yeah, it's the Iliadic cycle. Yeah. So. The test between these two potential chefs is to cook a dinner because Josh is going to propose to his fiance. Now, the joke about his fiance is that she is not nice, I think. She doesn't really get any jokes.
She's just hot.
She's just That's hot. Ideal. She's hot and horrible.
Played by Mallory Jansen.
Mallory Jansen? That's a name and a half.
Mm.
She's supposed to be kind of American posh, Mallory Jansen.
Yeah. She's kind of like all of her lines could have been delivered with like a Starbucks Frappuccino in hand. They have that kind of energy to them. Oh, she's Australian.
She's got a kind of, what's the Gilmore grandmother called? Emily. She's got a kind of Emily Gilmore vibe about her, except she's like 20.
On her Wikipedia page, it says she was born in 1989 or 1990, which I like that kind of, you know, like she's Herodotus or something. Born circa 1989.
Well, they tried to date her, but it's honestly really, really difficult to get her mouth open.
Yeah, well, she wouldn't let him cut off her leg to cut the rings, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Women, eh?
I mean, and fair play to, but I think that was an unfair expectation of Mallory Jansen. I wouldn't have let them do that either.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Apparently, that's the only way you can date an Australian.
You don't want the dendrochronologist near you.
No, absolutely not.
They're really cooked. That's a cooked profession. Imagine being like.
Why does dendrochronologist sound like a Green Party MP?
But imagine being a kid and being like, you know what? I want to find out how old trees are. But I don't want to do it in a normal way.
Yeah.
I want to do it in a normal way. I don't want to do it based on how old I know the woodland to be. No. I'm going to need to see the inside of that tree. Like, dendrochronologists are tree serial killers.
Yeah, it's very funny to be like, I want to know how old this tree is via the medium of ensuring that it gets no older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they're like...
It's over for you.
They're real creeps. The dendrochronologist.
For you, the food is over.
What are they up to? Also, like, what kind of qualification do you need? Like, can you count up to 10? Yes. All right, have at it. Here's a chainsaw. Off you go. Off you go into the woods.
Yeah.
We want to know how old that tree.
The Texas Chainsaw Massacre is just when the dendrochronologists turn up.
We want to know how old that tree is. Why? I don't know. We just do. Yeah. Just for reasons, normal reasons.
I want to know if it qualifies for a winter fuel allowance, which is ironic because it is in
means,
and of itself.
That's the means testing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, I was reading something like, earlier that someone,
don't want their
someone's
legs
done
cut
a study.
Off. They just don't. They just
no,
don't want it.
They don't. No. No, someone's done a study that apparently all of those, that there's this concept in, I don't know, like anthropology maybe, or like medicine, that they call blue zones, which are these parts of the planet where supposedly there are all these people living to well over 100 and in good health. And then some like PhD, like medical student or someone who is researching this found that like all of these areas are just places where there are high levels of like basically inefficient record keeping and or pension fraud. Which is great. So like for years people have been like, why do people live so long in these parts of the world? And it's like pension fraud, actually.
Yeah.
This guy is 72.
They're simply lying is what's happened there.
Yeah.
that's very funny. Send in the dendrochronologists, they'll put a stop to that.
Yeah.
They'll put a stop to that quickish.
They should be able to put like an apple corer through an old guy's leg and see how old he really is.
Yeah. That'll fucking learn him. Right, okay,
yeah.
Let's...
How much do you really want this pension?
So that's like kind of like Saw 12 when they really run out of ideas.
Well, Saw 12 is basically just like the UK at this point.
You have to...
I want to play a little game. Try and get a GP appointment.
Yeah. You can't. That's the... There we go. Saw 12 is very short. Because it's just trying to get a GP appointment.
This phone only works between 8:30 and 8:31 a.m. Good luck. Yeah.
Lovely stuff. Lovely stuff.
Lovely
Very
stuff.
Very topical.
Lovely stuff.
So, so the fiancé rings up while Gabby is cooking the sample meal. Oh, we also meet Gabby's housemate, who's called Sophia, and as we've discussed before, the joke is that she's Latina. The joke is not that she. It's like Ernest Hemingway. It's very economical with its descriptions. Mm. So again, you might think, oh, is it like this kind of offensive caricature of like a kind of sassy, fiery Latina? No. The joke is that she's Latina. The joke is that she's not white. That's literally the joke. If you're looking for something more. It's not there. It's not there, my friend.
Puts me in mind of my favourite Hemingway short story, For Sale, Premise, Never Explored.
Well, you know what? Having got quite a large monster truck of a babby, I actually have realised that the Ernest Hemingway sad short story, it's not sad at all. Like, it's just that Ernest Hemingway is commenting on the fact that A, babies refuse to wear baby shoes under any circumstances, and B, they grow so quickly that if someone has bought them a pair of baby shoes, you got to get rid of them because they're just growing too quickly. So I think that's the joke. I think that's that's the actual meaning behind the story. I think he'll be very surprised to hear that this was supposed to be a sad short story when actually he's expressing his frustration at the fact that his baby takes the shoes off and throws them across the room.
Yeah, and about people lowballing him on Facebook Marketplace.
People do lowball on Facebook Marketplace.
They really do. I don't sell a lot of stuff on Facebook Marketplace, but on the rare occasion that I have been involved in any kind of Facebook Marketplace situation, it's just like people offering amounts of money that are an order of magnitude different to the asking price. And you're like, what did you think the response to this was going to be?
What I love about Facebook Marketplace is how it is inhabited by people who spend all day on Facebook Marketplace, like gambling addicts spend all day, like the bookies, like watching every single race that comes in. They're there fucking refreshing. And so because they're in this kind of, they're in this interesting, like, sealed environment. So they think that everyone else on Earth is doing this as well. So they will send you a message saying, is this still available? And then 45 minutes later, if they don't get a reply, they will send you a row of question marks. They love doing that.
Weird,
like,
men on dating apps.
Yeah, this is like the
sending
dopamine
a single
high.
Emoji if you don't reply.
Yeah, for the... Ghost. Yeah, this is the dopamine high for the inhabitants of Facebook Marketplace. It's good.
Yeah.
It's high value.
Terrifying. People just constantly refreshing the page for a 2002 Renault Kangoo. Like, well, maybe I do want to spend £300 on this.
Well, the thing is that, you know, the Facebook marketplace it's got such a kind of long history of having a market. So everyone who's involved feels very, very attached to the history of the marketplace. It's like Norwich. This is a historic market town.
Yeah.
A historic market town.
Well, yeah, I mean, they kicked Norwich off when they're pedestrianized. Is Norwich a historic market town? Surely.
I feel like it might not be. No,
it's technically a city, isn't it?
Norwich is a city. Norwich is a double city. It's got two cathedrals.
And a university.
Yeah, but you can be a town and have a university.
I think a university or a cathedral is the criteria, no?
That can't be right. Is that right? Is that true? I thought it was just a cathedral. Apart from, like, if it's like a new city like Brighton, which...
No, I think, well, maybe they amended the original definition for this reason, but I'm pretty sure it's city or university. I mean, not that it really, because like Southend's a city now.
I think it's very, very funny just to call everything a town. Okay, you know what? I'm going to amend that. It's not very, very funny. It's mildly funny just to insist that something that is transparently a city is not a city.
Okay, in 1907, they implemented three criteria for a city: a minimum population of 300,000, a local metropolitan character that was sort of distinct from the wider area, and a good record of local government.
Okay, first of all, how are you determining a good record of local government? Second, when you say metropolitan character, do you mean the nature of the place, or do you mean there's like a particular kind of weird guy who hangs out in the town centre with a boombox?
Hmm.
Do you mean an individual character or like an intangible character? How are you assessing that? How are you quantifying that?
Yeah, that's a good question.
You send in the dendrochronologist cut into the town's core and count its rings.
In the sort of in the medieval period, like kind of until the 19th century, it was cathedral based, and then I'm not seeing anything about universities. So maybe I've Mandela affected myself.
It's cathedral based. It's got a cathedral, it's got a cathedral base, like a kind of like a rue, and then the kind of building on that with the metropolitan character. Maybe you add cheese.
Yeah, and so apparently, if you're a city with a cathedral, you can additionally call yourself a cathedral city, like the cheese.
So if you're Norwich that has two cathedrals,
Dublé cathedral city.
Yeah. A tale of two cathedral cities.
Anyway, so the plot of the episode.
So the girlfriend breaks up with him over the phone while she's cooking for him. Yeah. And so she says, well, we don't want to let this food go to waste, so let's eat it together, which is, I mean, I would have some questions about her professional conduct. And so I believe with Julia Child, because she tells this whole thing, a story about like, oh, what would Julia do? And look, I'm pretty sure that is not what Julia Child would do. I'm no particular defender of Julia Child, but I'm pretty sure that's not what she would do. So they get drunk and have sex. And then the girlfriend shows up and says, like, I'm really sorry, I take back breaking up with you. And so he proposes to her. And then he says to Gabby, you're not fired because my lawyer told me that I couldn't fire you because we had sex. And so now she is working there. Elliot hates her. Yolanda
is not. She's also
not
yet
clear.
Employed by him. That was just a trial.
Yeah. There's
no employment law involved, surely.
They sort of forgot to actually have him employing her because she's still technically up against. So, well, he's called like kind of Michael Voltorio Formaggio or something. He's got like some sort of, he's got some kind of ridiculous Italian name.
Can I have the Voltorio Formaggio, please?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So that's what happens in this episode. I don't think anything else happens in this episode. I mean, like it is a plot to, I mean, you know, after a fashion.
Yeah, there's a great bit just in the recurring minor characters thing. There's this line, Chris Smith as Nick Walker, a cocky immigration lawyer who becomes Sophia's boyfriend. What an incredible sentence that is. A cocky immigration lawyer.
Oh, yeah. I thought you said a cockney immigration lawyer. Like, I
no, that would have been funnier.
He is cocky. You cannot deny that he's cocky.
You want to move to the
cocky.
US, do you?
Yeah, some right cowboys in here.
Kylie Minogue is in it.
Yes, Kylie Minogue is in it. And Ed Sheeran.
Wow. Weirdly, Ed Sheeran isn't listed in the guest stars.
I'm just trying to think if he actually appears or if there's a whole thing about him being friends with Ed Sheeran. There are lots of Elon Musk shout-outs, which is the only thing which kind of actually kind of dates it. But otherwise, it's like I said, it's a very kind of hermetically sealed thing. It could be from almost any point in history.
Yeah.
Beautiful, if you think about
it. On April 11th, 2017, a book titled Young and Hungry, Your Complete Guide to a Delicious Life was published. That is a one-sentence entry in the Wikipedia page. There are no further information about the book.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. Ah. It's got 43% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's shockingly high.
I'm not sure we want to put too much stock in the people who review sitcoms on Rotten Tomatoes. That does not feel like someone who is living a rich and full life.
No, that is true. We should start a letterbox where we just do terrible sitcoms. Yeah, I'm something of a cinephile. I've watched all five seasons of Young and Hungry.
I have managed to give George mild PTSD. Whenever he hears the theme tune of Young and Hungry, he does flinch.
Yeah. I mean, he'll need therapy one day, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's right. So that is the first episode of Young and Hungry. I fully suggest that if you have insomnia or something, then you should take on watching that. It's a kind of fascinating, I'll tell you what it is. It's an endurance challenge. So if you're do I want to do Iron Man, but I don't want to go outside and I don't want to do a lot of training. Instead, you could just sit at home and watch Young and Hungry, and you're having it's the same requirement of physical and mental toughness, but you don't even have to leave your house.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the television watching equivalent of SAS selection.
Yeah. Are you tough enough? Yes, I'm tough enough.
Hell yes, I'm tough enough.
Hell yes, I'm tough enough.
Yeah.
I should make Ed Miliband watch it. Young and Hungry. If you actually look at the credits, he actually was an executive producer, so it's quite funny you should say that. I'm literally just tormenting Milo with just the dumbest shit I can think of to say because he's got jet lag.
That was actually quite funny.
There's nothing he can do about it.
For the benefit of the listener, I'm battling jet lag today. I arrived back from Japan first thing yesterday morning.
Yep, jet setter.
I know. And so I was visiting Gabby Diamond's mum, who's serving the shogun.
Yeah, the joke from earlier. I was like, God, that's a weird thing to say. What a strange observation.
Yeah. But yes. So yeah, I've now reached the time of day where my brain turns to mush.
I mean, same.
Yeah, I was going to say actually, it is in some ways similar to being the parent of a newborn child.
Very similar. I mean, I can't see any difference myself. I think that's it. I think we're done. Done for this,
I think
this
so.
Episode.
Yeah. Thank you very much for listening. I think this is a bonus.
Hang on. The episode you did with Kath and Kim, with Pete about Kath and Kim, was that a free or a bonus?
That was a bonus. This week's
was a free.
Oh,
and then
free,
you
so
unlocked.
Bonus, I think.
So this is a bonus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much for your money. I am going to spend it on some baby shoes never worn.
Yeah, that's right. That is right. A collector's item. They're not going to be worn. They're going to stay in the box.
They're going to stay in the box because if you try and put them on the baby, he gets very, very angry and removes them and then hides them.
Yeah. Correct, which you do not want.
Which is an important milestone. People don't tell you this.
So yeah, thanks very much for continuing to support the show, especially during this little transitional period. And very, very big things to come as of start of October. So
yeah,
watch this space.
Very exciting. Very exciting. And look forward to hanging out with you all then. Not literally hanging out with you. I mean, we don't know you, and don't be weird. But
Oh yeah. Also, I'm on a UK tour in October and November. I'm going to Leicester, Leeds, Glasgow, Edinburgh, Newcastle, Bath, Taunton, Chester, Manchester, Bristol. So many cities. Oxford, I think. Birmingham, did I say Birmingham? Anyway, the point is there are a great number of cities that are going to be on sale, so please do buy. They're all on sale already. Please do buy tickets. I'll put a link in the show notes, and check out my special voicemail, which is on YouTube. Thank you.
Yeah,
all right, bye everyone.
Bye-bye.